section of faith, chapter 22, paragraph 3. Whosoever taketh an oath, or duly to consider the weightiness of so solemn an act, and therein to avouch nothing, but what he is fully persuaded is the truth, neither may any man bind himself by oath to anything but what is good and just, and what he believeth so to be, and what he is able and resolved to perform. Yet is it a sin to refuse an oath touching anything that is good and just, being imposed by lawful authority. So that's chapter 22, paragraph 3. So the content of oaths, or oaths and vows, you see later on that the concept of a vow is brought in. First of all, it is never to be taken rashly. We've seen this already. Whosoever taketh an oath, or duly to consider the weightiness of so solemn an act. Such oaths are only legitimate in certain circumstances, so it necessarily follows that we should never take an oath without full knowledge of and reflection upon the content of the oath or the vow. And once more, the Confession of Faith refers us to the third commandment in Exodus 20, verse 7. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. So we are, the assumption is, stated earlier on, that only the living and true God is to be the one by whom we swear. That's why Freemasonry, for example, built upon the idea of syncretism, of various religious options, is a non-starter for the people of God, because we may swear only by the name of the living and true God. But then secondly, the content must be true. The confession goes on, and therein to avouch nothing but what he is persuaded is the truth. So when an oath is used to establish facts, only what is true must be asserted, and what he is fully persuaded is true. Jeremiah 4, verse 2, and thou shalt swear, the Lord liveth, in truth, in judgment, and in righteousness, and the nations shall bless themselves in him, and in him shall they glory. The Lord himself is true and righteous, and only in his name may we swear, and therefore the content must be true and righteous. We should never assert what as true what we merely think might be true. We must always be careful to assert only what we know to be true as true. We've got to be sure that it's true. And that is true in all speech, but all the more so when an oath is involved. But then when undertaking by oath to do something, it must, that which is undertaken must be good and just. The confession goes on, neither may any man bind himself by oath to anything but what is good and just, and what he believeth so to be. Genesis 24, and verse 2 and 3. Genesis 24, verse 2 and 3. And Abraham said unto his eldest servant of his house, that ruled over all that he had, put, I pray thee, thy hand under my thigh, and I will make thee swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of the earth, that thou shalt not take a wife unto my son of the daughters of the Canaanites, among whom I dwell. And then in verse 5, and the servant said unto him, Peradventure the woman will not be willing to follow me unto this land. Must I needs bring thy son again unto the land from whence thou camest? And Abraham said unto him, Beware that thou bring not my son thither again. And then verse 8, And if the woman will not be willing to follow thee, then thou shalt be clear from this my oath, only bring not my son thither again. And the servant put his hand under the thigh of Abraham his master, and swear to him concerning that matter. What Abraham's servant swore that he would do was good and just. It was right that Isaac should have a wife, and that the promise of the Redeemer should be fulfilled through him. And it was in the interest then of the true religion. We may never commit ourselves to do what is sinful. And what happens when, if we have done so, comes later on in this chapter. But we must only commit ourselves to do what is good and just, and what we believe so to be. We shouldn't take a shot in the dark, and alright, if it turns out that what we've committed ourselves to is good and just, well, that's fine then. It is sinful to commit ourselves not knowing or unsure as to whether we're committing ourselves to what is good and just. We must find out if not sure. We must never take an oath in the dark, not knowing what its ramifications are. One of the great dangers of secret societies of various kinds is that the individual joining doesn't know when he swears what he's, the ramifications of what he is committing himself to. And for all he knows, it may later on entail sin, withholding information from those to whom it is due, or something of that sort. So we must know in advance what we are swearing to do. It is sinful to swear to do what we don't know is free from sin. To swear to do what we do not fully know the content of and the rightness of is to act in a manner of indifference to sin and righteousness. We must know that we are only committing ourselves to what is good and just. Then we must swear within our ability to perform. It says, neither may any man bind himself by oath to anything but what is good and just, and what he believeth so to be, and what he is able and resolved to perform. He's got to be able to perform it. You see how the servant, Abraham's servant, asks about what he's to do in certain eventualities, back in Genesis 24, verse 5. And the servant said unto him, Peradventure, the woman will not be willing to follow me unto this land. Must I needs bring thy son again into the land from whence thou camest? And Abraham said unto him, Beware that thou bring not my son thither again. And in verse 8, And if the woman will not be willing to follow thee, then thou shalt be clear from this my oath. Only bring not my son thither again. And the servant put his hand under the thigh of Abraham his master, and swear to him concerning that matter. So the servant is, as it were, ascertaining the parameters of the commitment. He's finding out what happens if the girl won't come. What am I committing myself to do then? And he says, if you won't come, don't bring my son to her, you're clear of the oath. He pins down the limits of the oath, of the commitment. And that is another reason for ensuring that you always know the content and ramifications of any oath beforehand. We've seen that we must do that so as to avoid potentially committing ourselves to do what is sinful. We must also do so to avoid potentially committing ourselves to do what is actually beyond our power to perform. And then we must be resolved to perform. You see, it says, and what he is able and resolved to perform. To take an oath to perform something with no intention of doing it, or with a sort of a reserve that, well, I'll do it if it suits, but, you know, if the circumstances aren't favourable, well, I can just forget about this oath. That is sinful. And so we must perform what we swear to do. And later on it goes on to deal with the question, well, what if you swore to do what is disadvantageous, or what turns out to be disadvantageous? Well, it's still binding, provided it's not sinful. And so there must be a real resolve to perform. And that's another reason for pinning down what is it that we're committing ourselves to. Is it lawful? Do we know it's within our power? Are we fully committed, irrespective of circumstances fluctuating, to do it? Pin down what it is that the oath entails. And then thirdly, the sin of refusing imposed lawful oaths. The sin of refusing imposed lawful oaths. Yet is it a sin to refuse an oath touching anything that is good and just, being imposed by lawful authority? The proof text given, Numbers 5:19. Numbers 5:19, and the priest shall charge her by an oath, and say unto the woman, if no man hath lain with thee, and if thou hast not gone aside to uncleanness with another instead of thy husband, be thou free from this bitter water that causeth the curse. Verse 21, then the priest shall charge the woman with an oath of cursing, and the priest shall say unto the woman, the Lord make thee a curse and an oath among thy people, when the Lord doth make thy thigh to rot and thy belly to swell. And here it's an oath seeking the curse of God on the woman if she has been unfaithful. That she was expected to submit to that lawful oath. Nehemiah chapter 5 and verse 12. Nehemiah chapter 5 and verse 12. And this is when it became apparent that some of the Israelites, some of the Jews, were oppressing and extorting from their brethren, and they are required to restore the land and houses and so on to their brethren. Nehemiah 5 verse 12. Then said they, we will restore them and will require nothing of them. So will we do as thou sayest. And I called the priests and took an oath of them that they should do according to this promise. Also I shook my lap and said, so God shake out every man from his house and from his labor that performeth not this promise. Even thus be he shaken out and emptied. And all the congregation said, Amen. And praise the Lord. And the people did according to this promise. So it was an imposed oath, but it was right that they should submit to it. Exodus 22 and verse 7. If a man shall deliver unto his neighbor money or stuff to keep, and it be stolen out of the man's house, if the thief be found, let him pay double. If the thief be not found, then the master of the house shall be brought unto the judges, to see whether he have put his hand unto his neighbor's goods. For all manner of trespass, whether it be for ox, for ass, for sheep, for raiment, or for any manner of lost thing, which another challengeth to be his, the cause of both parties shall come before the judges, and whom the judges shall condemn, he shall pay double unto his neighbor. If a man deliver unto his neighbor an ass or an ox or a sheep or any beast to keep, and it die or be hurt or driven away, no man seeing it, then shall an oath of the Lord be between them both, that he hath not put his hand unto his neighbor's goods, and the owner of it shall accept thereof, and he shall not make it good. So again, an oath imposed to put an end to strife. The Confession of Faith has already mentioned this in the previous paragraph. So a lawful oath being imposed by lawful authority in such matters ought to be taken. So they're repeating that negatively, that it's sinful to refuse such a lawful oath. Whether they had in mind the solemn legal covenant, which some did refuse to take, certainly they held strong views that imposed oaths, when for things lawful, should be taken. So we should not fail to bind ourselves to what is right when required. And why should we? If required by legitimate authority to take an oath for something that we ought to do anyway, why should we refuse to take such an oath? If we ought to do it, then it is legitimate when asked to bind ourselves to the performance of it. It does mean that if we don't do it, then as well as the sin of not doing what we ought to do, there is the sin of breaking the oath as well. But nevertheless, if we are resolved to do what is right in the sight of the Lord, then oaths requiring us to do just that will not be a stumbling to us.